India has about 6% air conditioning penetration. US and Japan have about 90%, China is around 60%. So you can see that with affluence, where India will go, which means roughly in next 2 to 3 decades, we will have 10 times the current capacity. It is not possible to provide that in terms of energy resources, nor the capital resources. So it needs to be affordable. The current technologies do not make it affordable. So we are starting to figure out different ways as to how we will do this differently in India. I am Madhusudan Rao from Urja Energy, and this is Climate Tech Talks.
Welcome everyone. Today we'll discuss about energy efficiency in buildings. We had a wonderful conversation with Madhusudan Rao. He's the managing director of Urja, which, by the way, means energy in Indian. Urja is an energy efficiency company working on heating and cooling solutions in India. And they provide a disruptive way of cooling buildings that doesn't need refrigerants or air conditioning. It's very interesting. Let's jump right into it. Welcome, Madhusudan. I'm very happy to have you here and thank you for your time. Madhusudan Rao is the managing director of Urja Energy. He's calling us from India. Welcome, Madhu. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on the call today.
Yeah, why don't we kick it from the beginning? And could you tell us who is Madhusudan Rao and what's your background?
I'm the founder of Urja Energy, based out of India. And we provide energy efficiency and renewables-based cooling and heating solutions, mostly in Indian market as of now. I'm a mechanical engineer by training, and I've been an entrepreneur for most of my working life. I also have a professional degree from Stanford Graduate Business School. My expertise is in energy efficient cooling and heating technologies, and we work in various such technologies like radiant cooling, heating tool, geothermal, solar-based cooling, and in industries, I've been involved with waste heat-based cooling. So this, I believe, would briefly be my background.
Great, interesting. And before taking it to Urja and your company, how did you end up working with energy efficiency? I mean, you are a mechanical engineer. What led you to that road?
I am a mechanical engineer. Unfortunately, for a long time, I didn't work as a mechanical engineer. Prior to Urja, I was actually a consultant with Warner Brothers in Los Angeles. And then moved to India to start Urja Energy about a decade ago. So until then, I wouldn't call myself a mechanical engineer, but I come from a place in India which has coal mines, you know, that feed coal to many power plants and industries. So what I foresaw that such towns as mine becoming ghost towns from what I had seen in the US with decline of, you know, the mining towns and the auto industry towns that had auto industries. Suddenly, you know, the source of economy goes away and they become ghost towns. So at that time, my motivation was to transition my hometown from a coal mining based town to renewables, like solar thermal. It's also a very hot place. But that journey evolved over the years from just being focused on a solution for my hometown to addressing a larger problem of the demand for cooling that we as a country in India are going to face. Now, this evolution took about 3 to 4 years to understand and devise solutions that are appropriate for our climate, our market here. So that is how I started on what my current work is.
That's fascinating. And how's the problem with heating and cooling in India? Is it a big problem? Is it a big market?
Let me put things in perspective. The climate in India is different. Right now, it is not a big problem. But any projection of future that you look at, whether it is by International Energy Agency or it is by, say, our own government, India is going to be the largest consumer of energy for cooling in next coming few decades, by 2050 or so. It will surpass China and US in terms of the energy we consume. And that is because we are uniquely placed from a geographical standpoint, if you look at it. The countries that we call today as developed countries, let's say in North America or Western Europe, Japan, and even if you take China into that, most of them are above the Tropic of Cancer. So the cooling loads are not high, right? Whereas most of it, India is below the Tropic of Cancer or has a tropical climate. So our cooling loads are higher. By that, what I mean is, if you take, let's say, an apartment of 1,000 square feet, okay, 100 square meters roughly, in, let's say, Paris, you would need probably about maybe 2 tons to maximum, maybe 3 tons of cooling system, air conditioner there. Right? The same 1,000 square feet area in India typically would require anywhere from 5 to 6 tons of cooling, because we have more heat, we build buildings with concrete. So all these reasons. So one is our cooling loads are higher, so our cooling demand will be higher. Second is the number of hours that we will use cooling in India will be at least 3 times more than, let's say, you know, Western Europe, right? Because the number of hours that we have of heat above, let's say, 25 degrees or 28 degrees are far more, right? So it is, so we have to find ways. We cannot probably just depend on the same methods that are being used by, let's say, you know, the developed countries. We need to start finding ways for us to be far more efficient, because it is our need. And it's even in terms of, and the need is also different. If demand in India, which is at roughly about, India has about 6% air conditioning penetration. US and Japan have about 90%. China is around 60%. So you can see that with affluence, where India will go, which means roughly in next 2 to 3 decades, we will have 10 times the current capacity. It is not possible to provide that in terms of energy resources, nor the capital resources. So it needs to be affordable. The current technologies do not make it affordable. So we are starting to figure out different ways as to how we will do this differently in India.
So you are not using air conditioners to cool your buildings, is that right?
Yes, we are moving away from air conditioning. I find 2 problems with that. One is, of course, the energy consumption and the sustainability aspect of it, right? Using air conditioning. One is, we already had one Montreal Protocol trying to fix the problem that air conditioning created, right? We burnt a hole in the atmosphere. I mean, trying to burn off ozone. And then we replaced with refrigerants, which, you know, warm up the earth. So we definitely have to move away. You know, that is the decision which was taken in Kigali amendment, right? So we are staying away from refrigeration-based technologies. They exist, they can be made more efficient, no doubt. But that is not where we are working. Okay. The second reason why we want to move away from air-conditioned-based solutions is mostly because of the quality of air. We cannot perceive the quality of air same as we can perceive the quality of the temperature of the air, right? So we tend to ignore it. And in air conditioning, in using air conditioning, at least the way it is used in most residences in India, where we use split AC, we just recirculate the air and are happy with the lower temperature or the thermal comfort, we call, right? Without understanding the quality of the air that is deteriorating as we use that air, right? We're adding carbon dioxide, moisture, biocontaminants to it, and spoiling that air, but we continue to breathe. So our aim is to use technologies that primarily use those technologies that do not use HFCs or CFCs like refrigerant gases. Second, do not depend on air for cooling so that you can get more fresh air, more ventilation.
I see. And then how is Orgia solutions? How do they play a role? How do you differ from air conditions?
So when we started looking at it, we started looking at the assumptions we all make in terms of what cooling will be. Today, when we say cooling, our thought automatically goes towards, oh, it has to be through cold air. Now, we question that assumption as to why does it have to be a cold air. So we went to the what is the source of the heat, right? Ultimately, cold air is removing the heat that is coming in from somewhere, right? If there is no ingress of heat, there's no need for cooling, right? So we said, why don't we address the source of the heat rather than allowing, today what we do is we allow that heat inside the building and then use an energy-intensive system like air conditioner to remove that heat. So in tropical countries like India, the construction material, we observe, plays a very crucial role. We're mostly using concrete. We have buildings of concrete that accumulate heat. And that is the heat that is radiated inside. So we said if the heat is coming through the building walls, ceiling, and maybe floor in some cases, what if we can flush this heat out from the source itself so that it doesn't come in? Therefore, you don't need as much air conditioning. So we went back, looked at some of the ways this was done before there was air conditioning or electricity a few hundred years ago. So we found there were some buildings which had these channels built into them where they would flow the water to remove the heat from the building. We started implementing that. Note that the same thing can be done with cold water, chilled water also. We don't use that. We just use water at ambient temperature. Our aim is to flush the heat out of the building.
And do you have to use pumps as well? Water pumps?
Yeah, we have to use pumps. But as I said, our main aim is not to use refrigerant and not to depend on air. So as long as we are flushing the heat out, we can bring the temperature of the building closer to what we normally see in winters, where we don't need air conditioning. So that is one way we are trying to implement this all across India. We call this structure cooling. And the reason why we believe this is important is because when you need low-cost cooling at a mass scale, right, you need a technology that is very simple, where people don't have to learn complicated refrigeration technology or use complicated equipment. All we use it is a network of pipes and pump to flush the heat out. Right, so anybody, anywhere can potentially implement this on their own. We are not patenting this. We are happy if as many people as possible can use, not just in India, anywhere else in the world where this would work. So a variation of this, of course, called radiant cooling is implemented in commercial buildings where chilled water is used. Of course, a refrigerant-based refrigeration-based system is there where chilled water is generated. So that we do implement, but structured cooling is what we believe will help us provide this at scale. We also, I say that because we have to understand the kind of buildings that today are not cooled. If you look at some of the buildings that we have in India, like the bus stations, railway stations, the government schools, the government buildings like courts, these are public infrastructure where they cannot be air conditioned because of the number of people who come in and go out. You cannot air condition it. The second is, just the cost of it. So what would happen is you will create a society where airports are air-conditioned, but bus stations and railway stations are not air-conditioned. The certain kind of private hospitals are air-conditioned, but your government hospital, government-run hospitals are not air-conditioned. You create a society, which is divided between cool haves and hot have-nots. And I don't believe that is a way forward for us as a society. We should provide everybody basic comfort that is needed for us to be in these buildings. So that's why we're more, more enthusiastic and optimistic about something like structured cooling becoming a very popular way to reduce the energy and provide basic level of cooling.
And speaking of buildings, what sort of projects do you have going on so far, Madhu?
We mostly have focused on commercial buildings so far. The reason for that is the way the entire projects are designed. Everybody looks at a certain payback. It's easier to have paybacks when the air conditioning is used for a longer period, which we find in commercial buildings. So we do a lot of commercial offices. Apart from that, we have done a good number of warehouses in the pharma industry, as well as e-commerce boom is resulting in a lot of warehouses coming up. We have also done implemented this technology in educational institutions and dormitories where we do not need to provide the same quality of cooling as commercial building. Commercial building may insist on maintaining 24 degrees centigrade, whereas in educational institutions and dormitories, you don't require, you just need comfort. As long as it doesn't exceed 30 degrees, they're fine. So these are the projects we have done in we have also done some specialized buildings where like aircraft hangars or factory shop floors, military barracks, so that we have a wide base of buildings in which the technologies that we are talking about are tested, implemented, and run for a few years for the market to gain that confidence.
Yeah, I agree. Can you also work on pre-existing buildings, can you upgrade buildings that are already there?
We can, but we have not been focusing much on that. The reason for that is, I again will compare it, the Indian market to other markets, let's say Japan or Western Europe or Northern America. In India, most of the buildings that, let's say, you will see after 10 years or 15 years, I would say 70% of those are yet to be built. Whereas in developed countries, most of the buildings are already built. That's why retrofit is popular there. But our view is that if most of the buildings are yet to be built, then why not get them right at the beginning itself? Instead of launching a program 5 years down the line to retrofit these buildings. So our focus primarily, therefore, has been greenfield projects, new buildings. The other reason why we focus on that is the scope for the energy efficiency improvement is far higher in a new building because you have a clean slate. It's a clean canvas. You can design a system that can provide 50-60% savings. Whereas when you go into retrofit, then you are constrained by the equipment that is already there and the way it is installed. Theoretically and technically, it is possible. We have done some retrofits, but as a company, we are focused on the new buildings because that is where we feel the greatest scope is and to avoid future mistakes rather than trying focusing our energy on the mistakes that have already been committed.
And what about what's holding you back in terms of growing your company? Is it because of the market is still not ready for this kind of solutions, or are there other constraints? Do you face also like permits problems with the government, with buildings and stuff like that?
It's a good question because the technologies that we are talking about actually are not some rocket science and they have been existing for quite some time. So it is adoption of the market that we see as the biggest hindrance. I don't think it is the government or anybody. It's just the customer who's at the end of it paying for the system, right? Now, what my experience has taught me is anybody who's buying a new system is afraid of the risks. And this is in the market that we operate in, which are large-sized buildings, there's a significant technology risk if you are deviating from what has been the norm in the market. So who is to assess that? Who is to say that this works? Similarly, I mean, of course, then it is a financial risk. And then the question comes up is who can implement this in a proper way, the way it is supposed to be. So there are all these risks. And even if somebody executes it well, who will operate this new system that, you know, the operators have to understand how to operate this? So these are all the risks that today, even us, even Urjanji, we are putting in customer's side or customer's scope, saying we will provide you a brilliant system, but you know you have to pay for it, you have to manage it, you have to run it. So customers who are confident of this, of evaluating the technology, managing the technology, are definitely going for it. But a large part of the market is not capable of evaluating these new technologies, nor are they capable or have the manpower to manage or maintain or operate these systems because these are not something which are mainstream yet.
Yeah, I guess it's related to educating the customer as well, right?
Yes, but I would say the HVAC industry is notorious for its inertia. Even, you know, technologies promoted by established companies like Daikin or Mitsubishi have taken almost a decade to become mainstream. So what I believe should happen or will happen, we are also working in that direction, is let's say companies like us, which, you know, we claim that we know energy efficiency very well, and we can manage, we know this technology very well. What I think will happen, and we are working towards that direction, is companies like us will probably take that risk of installing that and providing that as a service, charge a premium for that. So what needs to happen, today we are selling the technology. Somebody comes and says, you know, buy our chiller, it is 30% more efficient. Buy our pump, it is again 25% more efficient, right? So we are selling it by component and we are selling technology. But companies like us can absorb all that and say, we will sell only the final benefit of the technology to the customer, which is X amount of reduction in energy consumption, right? That is what we will sell to you as a service. And for the risk that we are taking, we will charge a premium. Now, companies like us, we know how to manage these technologies, equipment, operate it, right? So many companies, including ours, and even the established players that you see in the HVAC industry, I believe will be forced to go that way if we have to speed up and scale up the implementation of such energy efficient technologies. Otherwise, it will happen, but it will happen organically. It may take a few decades. And those are the few decades that we don't have right now. So I think, exactly. So it will have to be technology companies working with, you know, large funds and take this new business model to the market, saying, you know, implement and treat these as assets, just as it has happened in the solar industry. A lot of companies, they install solar panels and just sell the energy instead of selling the solar panels or inverter or all this. So I think that will start happening in HVAC industry also, where servicization of cooling and making it as a service will soon start happening, provided there are right incentives and for it, and there is a market that would emerge from it.
Yeah, and just thinking about that, how do you see Urja in the next following 2 to 3 years? What are you optimistic about the future of energy efficiency in India? What are your closing thoughts on that?
We are very optimistic. There is a good growth. There was a temporary setback because of COVID. But it is not just the market. I think it is the ecosystem that is evolving that makes me very confident. We cannot survive this or prosper or, you know, grow without the ecosystem of policymakers or people who implement certain regulations, even manufacturers helping us to design and develop better products, right? And so what we see is a lot of encouraging signs. Like, India was the first country to come up with a cooling action plan, right? Realizing what are the risks for India if we do not have a plan to transition from these high energy cooling system to low energy. We have even changed our building code now, and we have a compliance in the building for energy conservation building code is there. India also has the largest number of certified green buildings. So there are multiple players in this who are acting to stimulate and grow this market in their own ways. Green rating agencies are educating customers and giving them incentives to go for rating. Policymakers are creating these policies and plans and creating these regulations that buildings have to comply with, right? Even funding agencies from UN or World Bank are funding newer ideas. So all this makes me very optimistic about how things will grow. Now, at what rate it will go, that may vary a little bit, and not everything that is thought of may be 100% success, but we are generally in that direction, and that's a good direction.
That's very inspiring, Madhusudan.
Thank you. It was good yeah. talking to you. I do want to add one final thing note before I leave. A quick note to all the engineers, researchers, and entrepreneurs. That we should start taking risks. It's not a time for smaller incremental steps of 15-20% savings. You know, time for that is past. We have to implement technologies that can reduce these energy consumption significantly, more than 50%, right? So we take such systems approach to each of these and come up with solutions and not be risk averse. Take risks so that we all can cut down on this energy and carbon consumption that we are currently doing and provide good solutions to, you know, our country, our society.
That's very pretty much it. We do need fast solutions and scalable solutions to tackle this climate change problem, which and we barely have 10 years, I think. So very inspiring. That's very true, Madhu. Thank you for your time. It's been really inspiring conversation, and yeah, I'm looking forward to see what Urja is going to do in the following years.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'll keep you updated on our progress.
Great, Madhu. Bye-bye. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
The views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not reflect the opinion of my current employer, TES. If you like this episode, please subscribe and give us a like. It really is important for us. This episode was produced by Julio César Fernández.